Hello, friends. You are in for a treat today. I have Megan Brame on the show. Megan is a 5-time award-winning entrepreneur and advanced digital marketing strategist. Basically, this means she helps entrepreneurs develop value-based marketing campaigns that create ride-or-die customers for life. We kick it off with a great conversation about burnout and about failure and about closing businesses intentionally that were profitable and pivoting in a big way. And then we dive into figuring out which social media platform you should be on, how you best use that platform, and kind of how you can use that platform to your advantage. This episode is chock full of such good, important information. I am so glad to have you here today. So let's dive right in. Welcome to Steady She Grows. I'm Casey Jordan, and this is the podcast that is dedicated to giving you an honest look at the realities of being a solo entrepreneur. My guess is that you want to grow a sustainable and feel-good business without burnout and overwhelm. I have a passion for creating clarity out of the chaos that is building a business without a giant budget, without a team of people to manage, and in the hours you choose to work. We're talking about the realities of what it takes to be a solopreneur, both logistically and emotionally. And now to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Steady She Grows. Today, I am delighted to have Megan Brame here to talk some marketing goodness with us. Welcome.
Hopefully. Thank you. You're making a lot of big promises here, Casey.
Okay. All right. I retract my previous statement. I'll ease you into that. Let's start with tell us a little bit, introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and nowadays in your business.
So I am an advanced digital marketing strategist. And what that essentially means is that I help entrepreneurs develop marketing tactics that create conversations and turn their customers into ride or die fans for life. That's my love and my nerdy passion. And yeah, that's what I like to do.
I love it. And I think it's important. I like that your podcast and a lot of your branding is around stop sucking at business. And it's
truth in advertising, dude.
Exactly. Why pull any punches? This is what we do. This is what I teach.
Dude, so. My first business, I sucked at business and I had to learn how to stop sucking at business. So, do as I say, not as I had done.
Yep. 100%. I mean, that's business coaching for me. People have listened to the show before, have heard this, but I have a habit of starting new businesses. Mm-hmm. I love starting businesses. And so finally my husband told me I wasn't allowed to start any new businesses. So I started a business helping other people start businesses and totally loopholed that. But it was each business I do something wrong and I'm like, okay, cool. Big learning experience. When you're doing a product-based business, don't do that.
I am so into the honeymoon phase of businesses where it's all exciting and it's all new and I'm going to make the best whatever. And then you're like, oh, but now I have to make the whatever. That sucks.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Oh, so in that vein, take us back. Give us a little bit. What was that first business? Give us a little introduction of how you got to where you're at.
So I originally started as a skincare nerd. I ran Metropolis Soap Company, which was a skincare and vegan lifestyle brand and home fragrance, all of that stuff. It was an industry darling. It won 5 industry awards. I got my name in the New York Times. I got to see pictures of my soap stacked up against Dove and all of it. It was so, on one hand, crazy in a good way, but on the other hand, crazy in a terrible way. I ran that business for about 8 years and I came home one day and was just, shooting the shit with my husband in the kitchen, just talking about our days. And I was telling him about mundane things, whatever was happening that day. And he said to me, you don't really sound like you're happy. And that was just a slap in the face or something. Wait, what do you mean? I was just telling you about my day. And then I had to start thinking, this person who knows me so well thinks I'm not happy. So how am I portraying myself to him, or am I really not happy? And I began to realize that I had worked myself from a dream job into a career I hated. I hated going to work. I hated making all of the things because I was afraid to give up control of anything. Mm. I I did the packaging, I did the product development, the social media, the product design, marketing, the bookkeeping, you know, customer service, all of that. I was afraid to give up control and let people in. And I said it was because I was afraid the money wasn't there. But, you know, now looking back, I realized that I was just afraid to let people in to see the rat's nest of operations, if you want to call it that, that right. I had done. And I came to a decision that I was burning out and this was beyond repair. So I could have sold it, but it was like a bad relationship. I just wanted out and I closed the business and moved on. I remember the day that I gave up my lease on my, again, this was in Brooklyn, New York. So it was, I had a 110 square foot studio where I was making all of this soap and it was very tiny and very cramped. But I remember the day that I got rid of it, like the lease was up and I felt like I'm supposed to turn around and give one last look at this studio. Like, that's what I feel like I'm supposed to do. So I turned around and I looked and then I shut the door and I didn't really feel anything until I left the building. And if I wasn't so clumsy, I would have skipped all the way to the subway because I was free. I was so happy. And it felt like such a difference to just get rid of this albatross that I had created myself. Yeah. But I still had to think about like, all right, what do I want to be when I grow up now? What am I going to do for money? So I had this blog called Handmade Brooklyn. And it was just, you know, like a collective of cool people I was meeting, cool artists I was meeting in the space. And I had realized that that blog had actually kind of transitioned in its own way from that into me talking about my own experiences as an entrepreneur. And what I found is that I really enjoyed the marketing aspect of it. Like, you know, I had these industry awards and I had beaten like Crabtree and Evelyn and just giant multinational corporations. I had beaten them. How the hell did I do that? And so I got to talk about that and I got to help other people do that. It began to just turn into this thing of like, oh shit, this is actually what I really love to do. This is what lights me up. And this is what I will corner you at a party and talk to you about endlessly if I have the chance to do it. So I went that route. I don't have a traditional business background. I don't have any kind of like, you know, theories of marketing expertise. I just know what it took for me to become this entrepreneur that ran the little industry darling business, compounded with hating the business, and show people how to do the successful side of it and how to avoid the shitty part of it. And that's why I get to talk to you today. You know, that's the cool part.
That's awesome. I think one of the things that really jumps out here that I don't think I've heard a single person say yet in this business is how happy they were to close a business.
Yes.
Like, we talk about burnout and we talk about pivoting and we talk about like leaning into what feels good. Like the second half of that story, seeing that the marketing was the part that fires you up. Like, those are such important things, but like, I've done that too, where like I shut the doors and it was like, oh, thank God. Like, now I can take a deep breath because this project is no more.
And well, I think that there is a stigma to it. I think that there is like a, oh, your business failed. And I had people who were in the skincare industry with me. Like, I was really good friends with them. I called them like my friendpeditors because I directly competed with them, but like I went to their houses, we partied, you know, like it was not a competitive atmosphere. And one of them said to me, like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could give it, but then people would talk. And I realized that there's this trope that I have written into my life, which is if they don't pay my Amex bill, I really don't care what they have to say, because 100%. These people can think what they want to think, but I still have to pay my bills and I still have to support myself. You know, I'm married. He can't support me. Like, I have to be an adult and I can't let someone else who doesn't affect me in a practical way dictate how I run my life. So, but I understand the stigma behind it. And I understand that it can feel like a failure, but it's so not. It's a pivot, and that's like, if that business hadn't closed, I wouldn't be here talking to you. There would have been some, I would have been like stressed out and divorced and like living in a really good smelling box in the city. But
Right, that's what I was just gonna say. So you're like, they're afraid of being talked about, but what about your mental health? Like, what
right?
about like having a business you hate?
Yeah.
Aside from the practical, like I 100% agree. If you don't pay my bills, piss off. Like I'm gonna have haters no matter what I do. So I'm not gonna listen to them either direction. But like, to sacrifice your mental health to want out of an industry and say you can't, and sacrifice your literal well-being for
Right.
somebody else's opinion is heartbreaking.
Well, and I think that it's so heartbreaking because the truth is they're probably not even thinking about you. They're wrapped up in their own shit. They're wrapped up in their own businesses and their own. But I understand the appeal in a way of thinking that you can't let these people down. You have to show up for these people. And in the reality, these people won't show up for you. And you're the one that has to go into that business every day. So instead of doing it for someone else, create the business that is run because it's something you love and do it the way that you're gonna love to do it. That's what's gonna make it successful.
100% yes. And I think too, the like, whether you close a business because it's not profitable, or you close a business because you don't love it, or it's just time to move on. Like, to me, I don't look at any endeavor I've ever had as a failure, because every single one of them taught me huge things. And like, so like my first business was a health and fitness coaching kind of thing. And I realized I hate writing meal plans and like writing workouts and doing that all day, every day. But I still, to this day, have a passion for fitness. So I stopped doing it as a full-time business and I started private. Like, I worked for a CrossFit gym and I taught a couple classes a week. So, like, looking for the part you love, looking for the part that works or that doesn't work. Like, I know now business that is super repetitive for me, while it's tempting because it's quote unquote easy,
Easy,
because all you have
right?
to do is refill the
Show
formula
up.
with new, show up, do the thing with new pictures. I can't do that.
No.
So, like I have graphic skills, I have web design skills, and every now and then I'm like, oh, it'd be so much easier to just design websites, and I would hate my job in about 6 months.
Especially if they're like, can you make it pop? You're just like, I will kill you in your sleep. Are you kidding?
Right. I want it to be unique, but I want to use pink and gray and white for my color palette.
I want to be different, but can you use a calligraphy font? That would be really helpful. No offense to
Exactly.
those who use calligraphy fonts, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No personal offense here. And so, like, how did you realize it was the marketing part then? So kind of in that thread of like, take what you love and leave the rest, like, where did that click for you?
I think, and hearing it in your story too, I think you'll agree with me when I say that you have to kind of do it all to learn what you love. And I don't think that I would have ever thought I would be a marketer. I don't think that that was ever like, one of the things that was picked by my high school counselor.
Not on
So
the list.
no, I don't think so. So I think that when it really clicked for me was I was doing an order for Birchbox, and they required 25,000 samples of a product delivered for them for free, by the way. And that is like, we can talk exposure and that's like how ridiculous those things are, but there's, I agreed to it, which meant I did it the whole summer. So that's
Oh.
like I did everything. I did the packaging and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that was me filling up those little perfume bottles. And I had a lot of time on my hands, right? So I was listening to podcasts, Amy Porterfield, Pat Flynn, Smart Passive Income, Chalene Johnson. I was listening to them and realizing that one, they're all really great at what they do. And two, I was really enjoying the episodes that were specifically about marketing, about, like email marketing or social media or things like that. And they clicked for me. It was, when you're looking at some kind of concept, like back in school, you're looking at this concept and it seems really just like, let's pretend I'm good at math, which I'm not, but let's say like I'm taking statistics. And I took statistics and I got the C, and that's all that I needed to do, right? But let's pretend I was good at it. And I had gotten some sort of statistical analysis that seemed way over my head. But once I got, like, once I looked at it a certain way, or like I kind of pivoted and it clicked, like, that's what that felt like. Like, oh, that's what marketing is. This isn't just about throwing money at Twitter. This is about, like, having conversations and talking to people. And let me learn more about that. And oh, that's what I was doing anyways. But now I see that there's a whole concept behind it and a whole, like, thing I can use to my advantage. There's something I can teach other people. And it just became this fascinating rabbit hole of nerdy passion that I was like, not only do I love this, I have to make other people love this. And I think that's when I really realized that what I wanted to be when I grew up, better or for worse, was a marketer and help other people specifically find that click.
Yeah. I love that. That click is so funny, because I remember specifically listening to Pat Flynn to Smart Passive Income. Mm-hmm. And this was, I hadn't worked in a couple of years, and like, I knew my husband told me I couldn't start any more businesses. So I'm like running all this through my brain of like, what do I do now? And I could still picture it's like driving out. We lived in the country, so I was driving out the gravel road back to the highway. And he said something, I don't know what, but he said something. I was like, oh shit, this is it. Yes. And what this business today came from was, I mean, there's been some evolutions there a couple years ago, but like, it literally was like, Pat Flynn was like, you can do make money doing this. And I was like, what? Like, oh, this, yes. Mm-hmm. It, you know, and yeah, and that's, and then you grab it and you go down the rabbit hole and you run and run and run and run.
It's so funny that both of our husbands had to give us some hard talks about just like, stop it. I love you. Stop.
Stop it. Yep. I think it's the creative brain. He's an engineer, so he's logic through and through. And so sometimes I could just like see him just like, he just has to like reach out and grab me by the collar and just be like, slow down, take a breath. And I'm like, oh, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. So in this, let's talk about burnout real quick.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave it at that. Okay. run with it.
So here's what burnout looks like in my head, in my world. Burnout looked like, so I suffer from depression, and my depression is manifests itself in the form of apathy, where just like, I can't get out of bed. I can't do it. I won't do it. Like, no, it's not happening. So when I noticed I was burning out, I was angrier on a like a wholesale level. I took things really personally. Like if I got rejected from a show, or if my soap wasn't featured in something, I took it personally. I was agitated. I was way more inclined to let my apathy run. And it was mixed with depression, apathy, anger, and just inherent drive. But I liken it to what I call hustle culture. And, you know, what you were talking about before with your first business and my first business, see if this is true for you. Like this all came about during like the height of Gary Vee and, you know, jab, 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 right hook, work, 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 work your face off. Don't take breaks. You are weak if you stop. And I had that voice yelling at me when I was apathetic and angry and having all these negative emotions. And it just came to a head where I was like, I can't be this person anymore. I don't like who I am. I don't like the way I talk to myself. I don't like the way I treat my husband. I don't want this life. And I think that's when I realized that was the burnout. The burnout was the culmination of all of these little factors coming up and saying, not only are you not enough, but everything you do isn't going to get you to that enoughness. And then I realized that there's no line at what enough is. There's no cross-offable thing. And me pushing myself this hard for nothing that was tangibly achievable was the realization that I was going in a really dark path and I needed to make some changes. Now, looking back, I can say that, but at the time, I think that I just took it as the facade of work. I have to work. I'm the entrepreneur. I have to work these hours. I don't shut off. I don't turn off. I can put my computer away, but I'm still going to go check my email. Like, I was sleeping on the couch because my brain would not stop, and mm-hmm. I had to have TV on. I still have to have TV on to keep my brain focused on that. Otherwise, it would just give it into like all of the shit that I was doing wrong. And that's when I realized, like, looking back, I realized that that was the burnout. But back then, I just thought it was work. So I think to look at burnout and to kind of figure out like how to recognize it in yourself, I think it's just when you realize that you are setting yourself up for an impossible task, and not even like a impossible feel good story ending that like you climb Mount Everest and you're there and you're awesome. Like, just realizing that Mount Everest never ends and you're never going to achieve that top because there is no top. Once you realize that, I think that's when you can kind of say it's time for something new and it's time for a new path. And it's not a failure. I never say, like, I'm so happy to talk about my burnout and my closing of the business because that was not a failure. That was the opportunity to come and talk to people about that story and help people. Casey, talk to you. Like, it, all of that is so cool. And I'm so thankful that I get to do it. So that's my really long ramble about what burnout looks like to me and what you can kind of decide burnout, when to burn out, and to be okay with that. Is that way too rambly?
No, I think it's perfect. Okay. You brought up some important things, because mm-hmm. as you were describing what the burnout looked like and felt like, mm-hmm. I realized I don't think I've ever heard people talk about that part of. We mm-hmm. talk about, oh, I hit burnout, so I changed my business, or, oh, I'm feeling burnt out, so I'm going to take a break. But like, what is burnout? And I think it does look different for different people, but the feelings that you're describing are also feelings that I struggle with, in terms of like, society has kind of taught us that you're not supposed to like your job.
Yeah.
Like, you think about like 9-to-5ers and just like, oh, doing the slog, another day mm-hmm. in paradise. And it's like, we're so ingrained that work is supposed to be unpleasurable and hard. And it would be easy to not see the burnout in that.
Right.
Until you're way past it. And so, yeah, to be able to like look at that and see like, I just hate showing up for work every day.
Right.
That's and there's not how work's supposed to feel. Like, whether exactly. you're like, whether you're corporate or not, like, that's not how work's supposed to feel.
Right. And I think, to your point, if you say that you like your job, then people are like, what's wrong with you? Like,
right.
either you're naive or you're dumb or something. You're not like getting, yeah. like, how can you like going to work?
Well, right.
Because you make work what you want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, a lot of, for me and I, with my audience a lot, I talk about like, I have post-traumatic stress and a brain injury yeah. and chronic pain. Like, I go through cycles where I physically or mentally can't work for a while. You know, the oh. depression and the anxiety mm-hmm. flare, whatever it is. And so like that height of that Gary Vee hustle, like that, then I internalized that as like, I'm a shitty business owner because I won't schedule 3-minute meetings because I need to take those 3 minutes to take a deep breath. And right. like unprogramming myself from all of that to like, this week I might work 40 hours and next week I might work 6 and fuck all, it's my business.
Right.
That's what feels right for me. And for me, inconsistent pacing is the correct pacing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you what's right for you. If you want to work 8-to-5 on your personal business, like, hell yeah, do it if that's right mm-hmm. for you. But untangling what society has taught us all of this is supposed to look like.
Agreed. 400%. And also, especially for entrepreneurs, of like, you're supposed to be working 80-hour weeks and you're supposed to, I have very hard set boundaries where I won't work weekends. Like, you know, okay, there are exceptions every now and then, but right. For I have said no to things on weekends and pissed people off, but that's when I hang out with my husband. That's when we watch shitty movies. That's like, that to me is so much more, that's what I'm working for. So
Exactly.
why would I, like, that can't infiltrate. And my work as an entrepreneur, my work is a life, but it's not my only life. And I think
Yes.
that that is something that you really have to work hard for. And to Gary Vee's credit, he is more now about emphasizing that, like, he takes time off for his kids and things like that. Like, when I first was listening to him and things, like, I thought his kids never saw him because he was just always working and always doing shit. And he's still always working and always doing shit. But I think that now he does let in that he is still a family man and he does, like, give that priority.
Yes.
So I think that hustle culture is thankfully evolving into self-care is not weakness. Self-care
Yes.
is necessary. And that's a really nice change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I stopped having anything to do with any of Gary Vee's content for a while because I felt like it was so unhealthy for me, and I felt like it was unhealthy for small businesses as a whole. And then a friend of mine like quoted him recently, maybe a year ago on Instagram. I'm like, you of all people follow Gary Vee. And she's like, no, he's changed. And I started looking at his content again. I'm like, oh, he really has shifted his messaging on still being a family
Good.
man, about doing your business in a way that's right for you, about talking about more ways of doing business. Like, it was just funny to see him make that shift. And I was like, oh, like you said, I think there will always be the level of bro marketers and hustle culture that will never change and will always be gross. But like you said, I think that shift is becoming more and more normal,
Yeah.
that like we do this so that we have evenings and weekends free, and
And
that
I think maybe this might be, I don't know, it is what it is, but I think because more women entrepreneurs are jumping on the scene and becoming more mainstream, I think that they are the biggest advocates for self-care and for balancing. You know, we have been taught the having it all thing and you're supposed to have it, but while that's not attainable, it's been a goal for female entrepreneurs for a long time. And so the more female entrepreneurs that get in the public sphere, I think the more conversations are happening about taking time off for your family, for your kids, for things, because we've had to make those changes. We've had to make that. And so, damn it, if I'm going to be talking in a public space, you're going to hear about it and it's going to become normalized.
Yeah, exactly. I was just talking to somebody the other day about seeing more of conversations around masculine energy and feminine energy within the small business industry, and how they are starting to balance a little more, and that feminine energy bringing things like self-care and like watching out for your employees and making sure that they're doing all right, and some of those things that you're just talking about. Yeah.
It's funny, I was walking my dog yesterday, 2 days ago, and I was thinking, I don't even know why I was thinking about this. I was thinking about how I could not be a dick to my, just like, you know, there's some corporations that'll just, like Enron or something like that. And I was just thinking, I could never do that to people. That would be a dick move. And I can't do that. It's funny you're talking about that. Like, I can't be that person. And I think a lot of female entrepreneurs feel that way too. Men too. I mean, you know, humans are very much not dicks on a massive scale.
Exactly. Well, so I want to take a sharp left turn here. Let's talk about how social media platforms. How do you pick? This is one that I'm a big advocate, less is more. I just caught myself this morning trying to add like a fourth social media platform to like my content strategy, and was like, time out.
Yeah.
Like, let's go down that rabbit hole.
Was it Clubhouse?
Yes.
I have taken, like, that is my line in the sand. I'm not going on Clubhouse. God damn you all. I'm not doing it.
It's so tempting
I
because
know.
everybody's talking about how amazing it is right now. But then I look at it, and just the layout of the app, as well as the way the content has to be consumed, like it has to be live and it tends to be slow, doesn't fucking work for me. I have the attention span of a flea. Like, and so I'm realizing, like, I get wrapped, and that's exactly what it is. I got wrapped up in the hype. I read an article and I was like, God, yes, I gotta give Clubhouse a try. Like, you're already a member, give it an honest try. Flip the app open, was like, fuck. This is
Nope.
complicated.
I won't. People have been, are you on Club? No. No. And you can call me an old lady. I don't care. I'm sticking with the ones that I know. So what I teach my clients when it comes to marketing strategy, and I get, when I was a director of marketing and communications, like back when I worked corporate, I got in fights, like not fisticuffs, but definitely fights where maybe like, let's all just take a timeout, where we will not be on every platform and my clients won't be on every platform because your customers aren't on every platform. They could all have TikTok accounts and Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts, but where are they consuming the content? That's where you want to be. If you're not a visual company, if you don't have products or you're not the face, like the, when I was a director of marketing, the companies were recruiting services and certifications. So nothing visual, right? So I fought with these people and multiple companies about, you're not going on Instagram because your customers aren't there. They're not there on Instagram looking for certification information. They're there looking at FOMO, at pictures of hot people or good quotes or things like that. They're not there for your services. They're on LinkedIn for your services. They're on Twitter for your services, not Instagram, Pinterest. Well, Pinterest to some extent for blog content, but like my point, be where your customers are consuming the content that you deliver and do the hell out of that one. Yes. Me personally, I have an Instagram presence, but I don't focus on that so much as I do Pinterest, YouTube, and my podcast, because those are the ways that I can best deliver my message and content to the people who I want to work with. They're on Pinterest looking for social media tips. They're on YouTube looking for tutorials on Planoly or Tailwind. They're on my podcast because I'm a really big nerd and they love to talk about, they love to hear me talk about being a nerd, you know? So that's where I'm the most effective. And so that's where I do the hell out of my social media. If you're trying to figure out which platforms you should be on for your business, don't start with looking at where your competitors are, because that's just a chain reaction most of the time of, I see competitor A, so I'm going to be competitor B. And then you come on and you see competitor B and A are on there, but B's only on there because A was on there, and not right. just actually because it's effective. And so you're just like, just creating all of this content that doesn't go anywhere or do anything for you or your people. So instead of looking for where your competitors are, look to where your customers are and how they're consuming the content and what they're looking for. And then that way you can strategize where to put the best amount of time and effort. Once you figure that out, front load the hell out of it. Don't be live. Like, I know you can do Instagram stories and that's totally fine. And YouTube has stories now and everybody has stories. Be live occasionally, but front load as much content as possible and use a scheduler to make that happen. That just reduces so much friction when it comes to marketing and making your life so much easier. Uh-huh. So I use Planoly and I use Tailwind because they just make my life so much easier. Use whatever works best for you. Social Bee, Buffer, Hootsuite, whatever. But utilize them as a tool and not a crutch. So they'll use something to schedule your content so that your content gets out there on a consistent basis, because that's what sets you ahead of so many other people. And then once your content's out there, use the time that you would have been trying to like do all of this ahead of time to engage your community and be a part of the community. So if you're a vegan soap maker, get on vegan skincare subreddits. If you're a marketer, get on entrepreneur subreddits. Like, be part of communities. If you're a knitter, get on Ravelry. Like, be where your people are. Be part of the community. There's that woman, she wrote 50 Shades of Grey. I can't remember. E.L. James, is that right?
Yeah, maybe.
We'll say it is. We'll write our own history here.
All right.
But she started 50 Shades of Grey as Twilight fanfic in a Twilight fanfic forum before she ever had the publishing deal, before the movies or whatever. she had these people who were championing her because they loved her story. They loved that she was like taking comments and being engaged, being part of the community. And that's what made her successful. I've never read 50 Shades of Grey, but I know that it exists in the world because it has that giant community behind it. It wasn't because she's on TikTok just posting shit. It's because she was in those forums being part of the community. And so that's my really long-winded answer for you.
I like your long-winded answer because it kind of covers all the important things. I mean, that's the same. Clients ask all the time, like, which one should I pick? And I'm like, A, which one are you most comfortable with?
Yeah.
And B, where are your people? So if you're like, for me, my audience is pretty well split between Facebook and Instagram. I can find a lot of my people on both. I am trying to get away from Facebook. I know a lot of people are. I lean heavily to Instagram. I have a second project I'm working on right now that, like, I keep getting
Does
pushed
your
towards.
husband
T
know?
No, thank God he doesn't listen to the show either. But I keep getting pushed towards Twitter for it, and I keep looking. I cannot fucking figure out how to, like, Twitter doesn't work for my brain, so I don't think it's going to be a viable platform for me, even if that's quote unquote like I think my audience is everywhere. Like you said, that within a certain context of, like you said, people who are selling very specific services that don't fit in a picture format. Yeah. And so to me, that comfort factor too, because if you're not comfortable with the platform, you're not going to understand how to kind of play with it. You're not going to understand how to grow in it. You're not going to want to show up on it because it's going to confuse you every time. So I think that's another, no, that's another marker that I use.
I think that's brilliant. And it's so true. Just there's a trope, just reduce the friction, just make it as easy as
Yes.
possible. And if it's too difficult for you to get started doing, like behind me is my camera for YouTube and it's all set up. And I turn around and I do my YouTube videos. It's always there because if I had to like get my lights, get the camera, get all the shit, then I'd never get anything done.
Yeah.
So at least that way it's all set up. And there's a really famous YouTuber, Sunny Lenarduzzi, who she says that she works in her workout clothes so that she will work out because if she has to like change and then get ready, then she'll never do it. So just be where it's less friction for you to be and set yourself up for success rather than just like you're not winning any awards for doing the most shit.
Exactly. Yes. Can I get that, like, on a little plaque on
We
my
need that
desk?
embroidered on a pillow.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And shit, I had a thought and it just jumped out of my brain. There it goes.
If any of
Boom.
you are on Etsy and embroiders, let us know that you could put that on a
Right.
pillow.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're right. That path of least resistance. Oh, I was gonna say, and that's where, like, I use Tailwind as well. I found that became a game changer for me in getting consistency with my content, because I could sit down and just get a bunch of shit up there. And also for me too, there was a thing of, like, early on, the content that I was, like, anxious about posting, because, like, it had a very direct, like, sales pitch call to action in it. Or I actually do this when I send pitch letters to other podcasters and, like, pitch myself on other shows. I send it through Gmail, and you can do a delayed, you can do a timed send. So I can tell it what time to send. I always tell it like an hour or two later, because then I'm not thinking about it. So I'm not hitting refresh on my email and I don't panic. And so, like, say,
That's
like,
brilliant.
yeah. So, like, Tailwind, I do the same. All that crap's up there. It's gonna post. And then every now and then my phone blows up and I'm like, what is, oh, that post went out and people don't hate me. Oh,
Yes.
cool.
I'm the same way where like I'm terrified to put out sales content because like oh somebody and like the sane part of my brain's like no one hates you. But of course like the lizard part of your brain's like no one loves me. And so if I just automate it,
Exactly.
I
Yeah.
don't have to worry about it. It's out there.
Exactly.
And you know there used to be such a stigma from scheduling content for you know like front loading things and just like you're supposed to be doing this live, man. This is all supposed to be. But
Right.
if you're not gonna do it because you don't do it live, then no one gets the content. So
Right.
make it easy.
Right.
Make
And
it as
well,
easy as possible.
I think too, the second part of that you hit on was, use that time then to go engage. Like,
Yes.
I have, you know, I have a friend and I see her post on a regular basis, but she never comes back and engages. She does her story and then she goes and does her thing, or she'll post, you know, she'll get some stuff up on her feed and then she goes and does her thing. I'm like, that's only half of it. Like that might get you seen, but that, like, all of my growth comes from interacting on other people's shit. Like on Instagram, that's 90% of like the new follows I get come from being somewhere else, not from my content. My people like my content, so they stick around.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, yeah, like free up that time, but don't forget to come back and interact with it. And this is a personal pet peeve. If you find out that I'm a follower of yours, don't ever do this or I'll unfollow you. When I interact and like put a comment on somebody's thing, you know, oh my gosh, I love this idea. Or like, hey, could you explain that more? I hate people not coming back and like responding to that. Like, I mean, I get it. Like the Gary V's of the world, the people that have millions of followers. I'm a TikTok junkie. Hi, my name's Casey and I have a TikTok problem. And so like, there's certain like people that I follow, I don't even comment because I know they're not going to either see it or respond. That's fine. But I have like, once you're under kind of a certain like follower account, like I expect you to interact with me. And maybe that's me being full of myself, but like, that's part of why you are here, is to change lives, to teach people, to inspire people. So part of that is like touching in with me one-on-one.
I agree. And that's like a wasted opportunity for sales. If someone is reaching out to you about like, hey, could you explain this more? Or that's really cool. Like, you not engaging with them, like the whole point of you putting the content up is to get sales in the long run, right? So if someone is starting a conversation with you, use that and use the hell out of it. Like, that's a warm lead.
Exactly. Exactly. So a question on this then, because so many of these social media platforms are doing this now. So you say stick with one platform, but if I'm on Instagram, I now have Reels, Stories, the feed. I just heard that in Live, you can now do Rooms. So you can essentially, it's basically their answer to like a video version of Clubhouse. Mm. You can bring people up on stage with you and have like more than one person on the live with you, and people can like work. And so like within a single platform, like I think Twitter's about to open a response to Clubhouse and have their own little, I think they call them spaces.
I mean, they YouTube. Had Periscope before, you know?
Yeah, they have Periscope. I know YouTube has YouTube Shorts coming out. Like if I'm on Instagram, should I stick with two of those five modalities, or do I shift modalities as it helps me with growth?
Excellent question. My recommendation, thinking about what I would do myself. So if it was Instagram and I am really good at the feed, I have a beautiful feed, I have content, people are engaging, it's great. And I am really good at stories. I do my stories, I have a reminder set on my phone, blah, blah, blah. And then Instagram comes out with something new. What I would recommend is, and I'm pausing because I'm trying to figure out how to best word this. So the good side is use whatever is new and shiny, because Instagram wants to promote the new and shiny thing. And you using it gets your content boosted because they want to promote it, right? They want to promote people using this and look how fun it is and look how amazing all of these content creators are. So what I would recommend in that kind of situation is using their shiny object, but use the content you already have in a way that works on that shiny object. So in the thought of Instagram Reels, what might be easiest to do is if you have like a carousel post in your feed, if you can turn that into a slideshow, like a video slideshow, add that to Tile or to Instagram Reels. Tile is an app I use for Instagram Reels. If you have stories where you have like it's episodic, or IGTV that's episodic, if you can cut it down to short bites and add that to Reels, then you're getting the best of both worlds. So I guess that would be my recommendation in looking at things of like, you know, Pinterest has story posts now. And if you're really big on Pinterest, it's good to play the game of whatever Pinterest is promoting, because they'll promote you. So if you have blog posts that are really successful on Pinterest, and you can create a story pin out of that, of like a tutorial or something like that, then use that. But don't feel like you have to give it all up and focus solely on Reels, or that you have to create all new content for Reels. Use the content you have available to you, reduce the friction, and add that to your strategy. But you don't have to keep doing it forever. Once the new shiny thing goes, you can kind of, you know, just move things around if you want and do less carousels or less IGTV or whatever.
Right. I love that. Because that was kind of what I was thinking too. My logic is, like, I know right now Reels are really getting boosted in kind of a opposition to TikTok. And so it's like, why wouldn't I use that? But I hadn't thought of the thing of just repurposing my content. Cause what I see, like, I see people struggling and kind of making fun of Reels because they're trying to do what, like, influencers are doing. So the little dances and the quirky, the music's playing, I'm gonna point here and say a thing and point
the clock,
like,
pointing, yeah,
and the clock pointing stuff. Like, some of my favorite TikToks don't ever do music. There's a gal who actually, like, helped create some of the original YouTube algorithms, and, like, she sits with her dog and talks about algorithms and talks about, like, cybersecurity, and, like, in theory could be the most boring thing, but to explain it in 60 seconds makes it fascinating, and she's an expert in it. So, like, if you're doing Reels, reuse your content, make it fit that format, but you don't have to, like, learn how to, like, people are like, oh, I can't use Reels because I don't know how to dance. Like, that's not the point. You're not a dancer. They're a dancer. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's just another way to deliver your message, right? Mm-hmm. So if your message is about cybersecurity, then just make that content that you've already made fit that format. And there's tons of, you know, there's a great app I use called Relay That, which will take an image and remix it into a variety of formats. So, like, my YouTube thumbnails match my Instagram posts, match my Twitter post, because it's all the same thing, and Relay That does that for me.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yes. That's where I bang my head against the wall, is trying to, like,
I know,
I want it to look native. I want it to look right for that format. And it's like, I don't want to restructure this graphic again.
Right? It's so cumbersome. Reduce the friction. Just, there are tons of apps out there that do all this shit for you.
Why I don't Google that? Because, you know, I know it has to exist. You just don't think to ask for, yeah.
Can I tell you, are you on AppSumo?
No.
Okay. AppSumo is like Groupon, but it's businesses that are looking for, in a way, seed funding. And what they do is they'll give you a lifetime deal to their app for 50, 80 bucks. I have gotten, like, I got on TubeBuddy when they first started, because they were there. I got on my social media scheduler, SocialBee, Relay That. Like, they have so much shit there that does fascinating things that lightens the load. And they're always getting new deals. So I have, like, a 45-minute YouTube video on all the shit I bought on AppSumo. It's so brilliant. And these people are thinking of so many different ways to lighten the load of entrepreneurs that, like, for 80 bucks to get something that makes all my images for me. Yes, please.
Oh yeah. No brainer.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check that out. Yeah. Is there anything big in this world of showing up on social media? I want to talk real quick about the difference between, like, followers and raving fans. Like, share with me what that looks like, and maybe a tip or two of how I can start working that direction.
Vanity metrics. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I too am a slave to vanity metrics. As much as I would love to tell you, like, it doesn't matter how many followers you have. And I know that we all play the same game, and that someone who has 50 followers is less influential than someone that has 50,000. Mm-hmm. I get that. But just because you have 50 followers does not mean you aren't effective and that you aren't influential. It's how you use them. And people who have smaller followings have the potential to be so much more effective, because of the way algorithms work. So you have 50,000 followers you have on Instagram. All 50,000 of them do not see your content. Maybe not even 1%. I don't even remember what the statistic is now. It's like something way less. So let's say like 100 people of those 50,000 followers actually see your content. What are the chances those 100 people are the ones who are looking for that? And they're not just following you because, you know, your boobs look great or something. So the ones, when you have smaller followings, you have less of a reach, but your reach is more targeted. And so when I talk about ride or die fans, I'm not talking about 50,000 fans. I'm talking about 500 people or 50 people or two people. If you're getting sales from 50 people and I have 50,000 and I'm not getting sales, who's the more successful person on this platform, right?
Right.
So the thing to look at is how you can make sure whomever is following you is the right person for you and is the right at the right stage of their life, I guess. And not even like if they're a beginning entrepreneur and you are a coach that deals with seven-figure people, like they can still follow you because they're going to get there eventually and you're going to be the one that helps them get there. But I mean more like make sure that the people who are following you are those entrepreneurs if you're a coach and not just like, I don't know, jewelry fans and you don't do anything with jewelry. Like, so what I recommend people do and what I do is I cull my followings. I'll go into my apps and I'll delete people that either are like ghost accounts or ones who I've never even heard from, like on my posts. I keep my lists really short because I know that the algorithms are working against me. And the less people that I have in my pool, the more effective I get to be. So those are usually my recommendations about like ride or die fans, numbers of followers. It doesn't matter the number of followers. I know it looks pretty and it looks like you'll be more effective, but even like sponsors now, they don't care about how many fans you have. They care about your click-through rates and they care about like how many people swipe up if you have swipe up features or how you work around it if you don't have swipe up. They want to see those metrics because they know those 50,000 people could be bought, could be whatever, could be looking at you because you have boobs, not because you have a good message. So does that answer your question?
Yes,
I started talking
absolutely.
about boobs and I got lost, you know?
It happens to the best of us.
You know.
Well, it was making me think. I think it's more common on TikTok of all the platforms is someone will go viral for some super random post that has nothing to do with the other 99% of their content, and so all of a sudden they have 100,000 followers who don't give a shit about their content,
Right?
and
And he'll
like.
never see their content again.
Exactly. And now, like, and like the way TikTok's algorithm works, like, now they can't get their shit to show up on the For You page because their stuff isn't hitting the right person. Like you said, the 10 people that do see it aren't looking for that bit of information or entertainment. So they scroll past it. And so that piece of content gets dumped by the algorithm. Like, I've heard of calling your list before, but I haven't thought about it in ages. I look at every person who follows me and I do instantly delete and block all of the bots and the Jim Smith with his $1 million. I'm like, get delete by and block and block. Yeah, I definitely watch them as they come in. I haven't thought about going back through the list at any given point.
It's scary. It's something that you have to kind of be accepting of like, okay, my numbers are going to go down, but it's only my vanity numbers. It's not actually my ROI or it's not my click-through rates.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I think that's a great piece of information. What is one thing you wish you had known sooner as an entrepreneur?
That it's okay to fuck up and it's okay to admit that you fuck up. If I had been able to say to someone, will you please come in and help me make soap? Like, I know that I probably am not doing it efficiently, and I know that you are going to roll your eyes at me, but at least it's going to get done. And at least I'm going to learn how to do that. So I think that having the ability to be fallible and to say, I don't know everything, I'll try and find out, or I don't know everything, but I want you to help me, opens up such a world of success and just a potential. You can't do it all, and you're not, like I said before, you're not winning any awards for doing it all.
Right.
So,
And we're all human.
right.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, I'm before this call working on my tax stuff, and we have a new accountant, and we're going to be very intentionally diving into the business side of my finances, and like I want to throw up just thinking about it because I have to like admit to this professional that I don't fucking understand numbers and I don't like talking about money. Like I have a lot of childhood trauma around money and realizing I'm like, but like this, I know I'm not the only one and this is her area of expertise. She can help me be better and or at least watch my ass so I don't screw up majorly. Like, yeah, I think that. Yeah, it's okay to fuck up and it's okay to ask for help are just priceless.
Think so. I think to your point, like I love my accountant because one, he only deals through email, which so it makes it way easier. But two, I had an issue a couple of years ago with not an audit, it was something with New York State. And I'm not saying it to be vague and shady. I honestly don't remember what it was. But I just remember like the one of the few times I called him and we were talking about it, and he said, oh, they are so full of shit. And I was like, oh, that's right. You are a human being. You're not just like, like you were with teachers. Like teachers were just some like thing that didn't exist outside of school. And like, oh, you're just a dude too, and you've probably fucked up, and it's fine. And so, like, don't put anyone else on a pedestal because they're gonna fuck up too. And just we're all just trying to do our best. So just accept that and let people in and let them see your mess. You're
I love it. I think that is a perfect note to end the show on. Megan, tell us where we can find you and learn more about how we can stop sucking at business.
You can come on my podcast, Stop Sucking at Business, which Casey will be joining me shortly. You can find me on Instagram, Pinterest at Stop Sucking at Business, or you can go to YouTube. I don't remember the URL, so I just have a forwarding of meganbrame.com/YouTube. You can also download my free quarterly marketing spreadsheet for all of you who want to figure out how to do marketing and where to focus your efforts. It's a totally free spreadsheet, and you can go to meganbrame.com/marketing audit, download it for free. It's all yours.
Awesome. And all of that, as usual, will be in the show notes. Megan, thank you. This has been so much fun.
You are so fun. I'm so thankful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in for another week of Steady She Grows. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to screenshot the show and give it a share over on Instagram. Tag me at casey.jordan and share your key takeaways. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcast or wherever you give it a listen. And until next week, my friends, keep on crushing it.